Hi, this is ESPN's Dave Lamont, and you're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
What is going on, Pirate Nation? Welcome into the Sports Objective. It's a Tuesday night, and we would typically be bringing you a Pirate preview, but obviously the Pirates are open this week, and we'll be traveling to Cincinnati on Friday, November the 11th. But right now, we're very excited to be joined by East Carolina outside linebacker Jeremy Lewis. Jeremy, we appreciate your time this evening.
Yes, sir. No doubt. Anytime.
So, yeah, Jeremy, happy to have you here tonight. Appreciate you joining the show, man. I really enjoy watching you play the game. You know, you're a physical player, you play fast, and you know, you're having a great year. So really happy for your accomplishments so far.
Appreciate that. I'm glad to be here, man. Appreciate it.
Now, Jeremy, before we dive into the present, just take us back a few years. And obviously you were a South Central kid right there, just outside of Greenville, and basically Greenville and Winterville. So just talk about, growing up in the area and, the decision you made to come to East Carolina.
Oh, well, growing up, I'm pretty sure you guys know my big brother also played here as well. So, that was a major impact on it growing up, being able to, go to his game, seeing what the environment was like, being able to actually stay home and live out my dream playing Division I football, So that was a big impact on it. And, when Coach Mo was here, he put my brother on scholarship. And my brother was a walk-on, and he put my brother on scholarship, and that was like a huge decision, like a huge impact to my family. We was going through some things. My mom was going through a lot of things trying to continue to get my brother through college, and they hit right on the money. So it was an ultimate level of respect for Coach Mo, because that's who recruited me. So it was an ultimate level of respect for him. And I felt like it was only right if I stayed home and played for him. But things happened. He got, and they got rid of him. But Coach Houston was able to come in, and the respect level is just changed over from Coach Mo to Coach Houston. Coach Houston's a great coach. So, nothing really changed there. But, yeah, it was nice to be able to stay home and play for the next level.
Yeah, sometimes, Jeremy, as you know, the only constant in Division I football can be, every few years there are coaching changes, unfortunately. So, it's never fun to go through it, but I think you certainly wound up, in a great place here with Coach Houston.
Yeah, most definitely. I've had a couple coaches changes from position coach changes, and it's always been, good for me. So, it was great to get from that, that family environment with Coach Mo until that winning environment with Coach Houston. He's all about winning, He's strictly business, and I love that, At the end of the day, we came here to play football. So it was great that he got hired for that job.
Now, Jeremy, in high school, you obviously played on both sides of the ball. So just talk about, when you came to East Carolina, we didn't have much depth, to say the least, in the tight end room. So talk about that transition, going from the high school ranks, playing on both sides, to playing tight end and then shifting back over to defense.
Well, it was it was a big decision for me, because I was getting recruited for both positions. And me having so much pride, I didn't know. I thought I was good in offense and good on defense, not knowing that I was way better on defense. So when I got here, we didn't have a lot of tight end depth. And Coach Houston asked me, could I play tight end? I probably wouldn't have seen the field on the defensive side of the ball as a freshman. We had a lot of depth there. So it was can you play tight end? I was yeah. Wasn't a lot of depth in the room, and I thought I could do it. So I gave it all I got, did what I could do to help, help the team win. Did a lot of special teams in my first 2 years. And, I caught the ball a couple of times, got a couple of touchdowns. But at the end of the day, my heart just wasn't there, And then we ended up getting some guys, Shane Calhoun, Ron Jones, all those guys. They were able to step up, so I wasn't needed anymore. I asked Coach, could I go back, trying to get my love back for the game, honestly. So I was able to do that on the defensive side of the ball. You know, that's what just it's, things have just been rolling since.
Yeah, that's great. It certainly, you know, paid off for you having a chance, opportunity to come in and play defense in this Blake Harrell system, Jeremy, which is very aggressive. It gives you guys a lot of opportunities to blitz and do some, you know, do some fun things on defense.
Oh yeah, that I love it. I love this scheme because when I first got here before Coach Harrell, it was more of a four down defense. So two true defensive ends, and I wasn't the biggest, like, to compared to the DNs we had. You know, those guys like try to 6'4", 250, 260 around that size. You know, I'm like 6'2", 230, so I'm a true outside linebacker. So coming in with Coach Harrell's scheme, you know, three bigs and like two outside linebackers, you know, two Mike linebackers, and I fit that like role perfectly, the rush role. So, you know, sometimes I can drop back and cover some, arrest the passer, you know, be on the line of scrimmage, set edge, do those, all those kind of things. And being that it's his new scheme, I'm able to show my versatility a little bit more.
So, obviously, Matt referenced the creative schemes and just the way Blake Harrell likes to run his defense. So just talk about Coach Harrell and just in the way, you know, he coaches you guys up, and obviously Coach Doust as well, because he coaches the outside linebackers.
Well, with Coach Harrell, it's all about consistency of preparation. You know, he practices what he preaches, man. Study. Like, he studies so much, studies so hard. Always try to push us in the right position, you know, to make a play. He'll like make sure he knows, like, if we see an offensive formation, he'll relay it all throughout the week. Look, they come out in this, they're going to run this. They come out in that, they're going to run that. And you know, that just escalates throughout the whole defense. So, you know, we're on the field, we remember the things he tells us, the keys that he gives us, and we just relay that on the field, and then it shows. Like it's crazy, because, well, I don't even want to talk about that, but he just puts us in great positions to make plays. And we might, like, yes, we know what's coming because we practice it all week long. Like, we study, we watch film, and he always just makes – he's a smart – one of the smartest coaches I ever had, I can say that. And Coach Doust, you know, he's a great coach. He preaches physicality, you know. You got to be physical, and consistent. It's all about the little things with him, like the little things. And the team success will bring out the individual success. So, you mean, like, you just do your job. Preaching that, do your job, you know, be where you're supposed to be, and you'll find yourself making a play with him.
Jeremy, taking a look at that BYU game, and I know Matt and I, we discussed this off the air last weekend, because, you know, playing defense nowadays has certainly changed with you know, some of the concussions and, you know, the emphasis on targeting, and that can be a whole other show, but we certainly thought it was a bad call when you got the roughing the passer call. I mean, you were just in our opinion, you weren't getting there late. So, you know, so kind of give us a perspective, you know, what it's like to play defense in this day and age.
I mean, they definitely take care of the quarterbacks in this day and age. I could see, like, going back and watching film on it, I didn't really, like, you know, I wasn't trying to, like, rough the passer at all in any type of way. But, you know, I probably was a little bit late, and I could have tried to held back, I guess. But, you know, in the speed of things, it's hard to, you know, just try to hold back. That's tough to do. But, yeah, in this day and age, you know, they most definitely try to take care of the quarterbacks, which is, I feel like they should. You know, some things just don't go as well as others. But, I mean, it is what it is at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was, you know, I felt kind of bad in that situation. I'll tell you, there was a blatant – not to get slightly off topic here, but Elijah Morris got called on a roughing the passer against Navy. That was one of the worst calls, fellas, I've ever seen. Honestly, yes. I felt bad for him. And that was a critical possession in the game, right, Jeremy?
It was on the third down versus Navy. And not only did they get the roughing the passer, they got him for targeting. So he had to sit out. So that was really rough for us, you know. And he was like, when we play Navy, Elijah Morris, he has such a low base. He can line up right on the center and, you know, just cause havoc. So, you know, losing him on that call, you know, made a big impact on the rest of the game.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I'm sure the folks around me at that game, they thought I had lost my mind. You know, I was yelling like Coach Hughes. And that's a former quarterback. It just kills me, you know, the way you guys invest so much and then to have it taken away.
I think you're cutting out a little bit, a little feedback. Jeremy, I don't know if you could hear Bubba there, but, you know, I was going to ask you while we get Bubba back here in a good spot with wireless service. What was the environment like up in BYU? I'll tell you, that's a place I never got to travel to. It looks like an amazing place on TV. Tell us a little bit about the environment up there in Provo.
I mean, it's a very nice environment, you know, very different, very new for me. You know, it's definitely cold up there. The air is very thick, you know, that's real, you know, and you know what I'm saying? When you get there, it's just like a very nice place. They greet you. They meet you. They tell you, thank you for coming. You know, I'm like, we got off the bus and somebody looked at me and just was smiling. Was like, thank you for coming. And I'm like, yo, we're trying to come beat y'all. Like, don't thank me for coming. Like, it's not gonna be a nice visit for me. Like, come on, like, no, don't thank me for coming. So, you know, we get in the locker room, they left us like a little hygiene, like little kit, personal kit, you know, deodorant and stuff like
wow,
that.
Wow, really?
We had a present from my other team. So I'm like, yo, they're trying to butter us up. And then when we get on that field, they're gonna try to smash our face and like we can't like, you know, and that's what Coach preached all week long, you know, like we knew what we were getting ourselves into. We knew it was going to be some beautiful mountains right outside the playing field, but you can't focus on that. You know, you got to stay locked in, stay focused. And he made sure that we stayed mentally focused and prepared for the game. And, you know, it was a great environment though. It was nice playing in front of that many fans. My Jack Powers, just like he told me before the game, he was like, everybody dreams to, you know, play in front of 60,000 people. He said, well, we get the opportunity to go hush 60,000 people, put them to sleep, man. You know, it was a great situation, you know what I'm saying? It was very nice, though. It was a good environment.
Awesome. Bubba, do we have you back, buddy?
I believe so. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, now we got you.
All right. Yeah, what I was trying to lead into, Jeremy, is in that BYU game, obviously, you know, they ran the ball better than, you know, we would have liked there in the first half, but as the second half went on, we figured things out and got some critical fourth down stops. So talk about those.
Oh, yeah. Well, coming into the game, we tell their game plan just as we did watching film. They didn't run the ball versus in the pistol versus anybody. You know, every time they got into the pistol, it was a play action. It was a bootleg. It was something like that. And coming in versus us, they got to the pistol and ran the ball. So there were times we were in pass hits or something like that. And we had to just, you know, adjust and get prepared for it. And we was able to do that late in the game. But they did get way more success in the run than we since we didn't want that. You know, we were mad we gave that much up. You know what I'm saying? So, but on those two fourth down conversions, we had some people, you know, step up, make a big play. Especially on that QB sneak. I don't know how they had tempoed the QB sneak and we was able to get big Jason Shuford in the game. And he's a big boy and we was able to put him in front of the center and he just blew it all the way up. And, you know, guys try to push the power back, jump over the power. They weren't able to get the QB sneak. And then on that fourth and two, they ran stretch to the boundary and Chance Bates was just able to, you know, read the running back. He tried to cut it back, hit him right in the mouth, and he was able to, like, it was him versus him. I mean, we had players just step up and make a play in that one-on-one situation. So it was good. It was good to see those guys, especially those two guys. It was good to see those two guys step up. You know, they haven't been having a lot of playing time, and, you know, they get in and they showcase their talent to make a play.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you know, Jeremy, one of the things that impresses me about your defense is that you guys, and this has really been a theme of the whole year, you guys will occasionally at times bend a little bit, but you never break. And, you know, you see this with a lot of these goal line stands with you guys. You know, you think back to NC State, you know, I think you've had four or five of them this year. It seems like this defense to me is mentally strong. And you guys, you know, hey, listen, in college football, people are going to move the ball now. That's just the way it is in this day and age. But I think you guys are very disciplined. You know, you get these big stops, especially in short yardage. So talk to me a little bit about that, the mindset that goes into that.
Well, we definitely have a veteran defense, you know. So you got a bunch of guys that, you know, they've done it before, they've been there before, and probably hasn't always been in that winning environment. And not everything, you know, we're starting to win more games, you know. Like, I feel like this season, you changed two or three plays and we only lost one game. And, you know, but that Tulane game, like, we really lost for real. But Navy and NC State, you changed two or three plays and we're only like, what would that be, like 8-1 or something like that? So, I mean, we got a bunch of guys that, you know, just seen it before, been through it before, have a different mentality, you know, no more losing. The mindset on that defense is different. You know, we text in a group chat before every game, like, look, let's go out here. Let's do what we got to do. You know what I'm saying? Love y'all boys. And it's like a family in that room. So we just, you know, you're not just playing for yourself. You're playing for your brother beside you. So, you know, you can't take no play off. You know, teams might move the ball, but at the end of the day, we play all four quarters and we preach that. And, you know, in the last four or five games, we've like dominated the fourth quarter. And that's just something that we preach. So, you know, that's just us. This is the mindset we have.
One of the things that really stands out about this team on the defensive side is the number of guys we play and our, you know, steadily improving depth. And it talks about the way this staff is recruited. And you have a guy like J.D. Lampley who comes in and plays such a key role, a true freshman, which is saying something because this isn't like 3 or 4 years ago where a freshman had more opportunities to play earlier. But you take a look at it, a guy like Chad Stevens, you know, Richard Alsbrook referenced Chad, just talking about the big-time stop on fourth down. The play I think about with Chad is that game, it was overtime against Memphis. And the second time we failed to get our two-point conversion, and then Memphis boned our end zone on their – she had the ball at the 3 yard line, the 2-point conversion, and Chad Stevens went right across the right tackle, some big play to push the third over.
Could you hear that, Jeremy? Yeah,
I heard him a little bit. Yeah, I was able to understand. Oh yeah, but Chad's different.
You're cutting out a little, Bubba. Go ahead, Jeremy. Bubba, you're cutting out. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Well, Chad's a ball player, man. He has a different kind of strength. You know what I'm saying? He's not the biggest, and he just moves like a bull. You know what I'm saying? So that play was a big-time play. I mean, it doesn't get praised enough. You know, like he could have easily walked in the end zone if Chad didn't make that play. And, you know, for me, I've seen him make that play hundreds of times, like in practice. Like, not often does that person block him. Like, he comes off the ball fast and he's strong. And, you know, he's just like a bull. Like, it's hard to block him. And he's just done nothing to improve. So, like, he was came in. It was my roommate when we first got here. Came in. He was a middle linebacker. And COVID hit. He put on some weight. He got switched to the outside linebacker rush like me. And he was fighting to win out that spot with a boy named Demir, who ended up transferring. And so he was able to get some playing time there. And then I came in a room and, you know, I was battling for that spot. And we also needed like a DN as well. So he had went to go play DN and, you know, it took some time to adjust into it, to actually put his hand in the dirt. But once he like found that will to do it and, you know, was able to actually like, you know, find a groove and how to do it, he's just been unstoppable since. You know, he plays the scheme so perfectly, you know, getting like doing his job, getting them gaps, been battling some injuries and been playing through them. But he makes those plays all the time, and it don't get praised enough. But, man, Chaz a ball. Yeah.
I agree with you, man. I've been very impressed with him. He has made a big difference this year. Yes. And I have a lot of respect for guys like that go through that process where, you know, Jeremy, in this day and age, like so many players, if they don't get to play right away, they transfer, right? Yeah. And I respect that because Chad Stevens is a guy, he's kind of come up through the ranks, and he's continued to work. He's had some position changes. And now here he is, man, and he's having all this success. So that's great to see. You got to respect that.
Most definitely.
Jeremy, we have some other questions for you. Folks chiming in on Facebook as well as YouTube tonight. Tommy Clayton from Roxborough, North Carolina, chimes in saying it's great to play meaningful games in November. So just talk about that, the way that has changed over the last couple seasons.
Oh, yeah. Definitely playing in November is big. You know, you got to be great in November. That's when those get like big time games start to click in. You get late in the season, you know, trying to get ready for those bowl games as well. So it's great playing in November, man. And I know, like, we was talking about this, like, back in high school, my coach asked us, who got the opportunity to play in November. You know, like, playing in November, that means you got a pretty good team, you know what I'm saying? And so I love playing in November, yes, most definitely.
And then Shell Powell from Charlotte says, hi, Jeremy, great season as an alum. You know, appreciate all you're doing, and you're so fun to watch. Quick question, who gets the play from Coach Harrell and calls it on the field?
Everybody. Everybody. We all look at the signal, and once we get the signal, once Coach Harrell gives the call, and once we get the signal from our signal callers, we all look. You know, we relay the call. He teaches communication. It should be visual and verbal. So, you know, we see the call from the sideline, and then when we're on the field, we all just tell each other what it is, you know, so make sure we all on the same page.
Now, Jeremy, since we're talking about November here and kind of where we are in the season here, what a huge opportunity for this team. It's got to be exciting. You know, you look, and I know you're focused on one game at a time, obviously. That's the mindset of a player. You know, you look into it, you have Cincinnati, Houston, and Temple coming up. But, hey, what an opportunity, man, to go out to Cincinnati and have a chance to, you know, to give it back to the Bearcats from last year, right?
Oh, most definitely. You know, it's the biggest game of the season because it's the next game of the season. But for some of these guys in the locker room, it's going to be like a meeting one for them. You know, some of these older guys, including me, you know, losing to these guys, you know, freshman year by a field goal, then going down there to their house, you know, it was kind of embarrassing. And then they was able to, like, run it up. And then last year they came and, you know, we felt like we had a chance. You know, we played our butts off and they were just still able to make some plays, you know. So this year, you know, a lot of those guys are gone and, you know, we're just looking forward to it. You know, we can't believe none of the hype, can't believe what no outsiders, man. You know, a lot of people probably don't project us to win, but, you know what I'm saying, just like they did with BYU, we're going to cancel out all the noise, you know, go in and just, like, do what we can do.
And UCF too, right?
Oh yeah, UCF. You know, UCF beat them, but I mean, that is like in our conference. You know, I feel like it's got to the point where anybody can get beat. You know, yeah. Like it's not really like you have those top dogs. Like you never know what's gonna happen in our conference, and that's one thing I like about it. But you know, UCF did get them.
No doubt.
Now, Jeremy, we had another question on YouTube from Brandon, just talking about, you know, the way the defensive staff, you know, the way things are set up on a game day. Obviously, Coach Harrell's up in the box, and we see him all the time, you know, away games on TV and so forth. But just talk about, you know, just the way things are handled as far as, you know, position coaches and coaching up their guys, and then you guys going over to the bench after, you know, you come off the field, and how you guys get coached up in a game situation.
You know, it's pretty much just like, it's pretty much how you think it would be. You know, Coach Ellis, the corners coach, you know, we got the benches lined up. Everybody sits in their certain sections, sit inside their guys in their position room. And, you know, each position coach comes up, you know, talks coach up, you know, tell me what you see out there, tell me what's different. You know, we talk among ourselves as players, how does he block, you know, how does he set, is he pretty good, how fast is he, you know what I'm saying? So we relay that message as a team, and you know, each position coach normally talks to the position players. Like the corner sits to the left, the D-line sits to the right, and linebacker sits in the middle. And you know, that's pretty much it. And then well, my coach, you know, he's also the special teams coordinator as well, so we gotta wait our turn because he's busy. Usually when we're on the bench, he's up getting things prepared, ready for special teams. So you know, and when he gets the time, he comes to coach us up. So yeah, you just find your spot, sit and wait for your position coach to come find you.
Hey Jeremy, I wanted to ask you, you know, your thoughts. I mean, hey, listen, obviously there have been some troubles in the kicking game this year. you know, not to stir up any negativity here, but when Andrew Conrad had a chance, you know, he's a true freshman, I believe, has a chance to kick that game winner last week at BYU, you know, when he's lining up to kick that ball, what's going through your mind right there? And how excited were you when he drilled it?
Oh, I was very ecstatic for him. You know, I told him congratulations. No, that's a big time play for him, you know, really put him on the map. And for me personally, not even because of the, you know, not because we've been unsuccessful on a special team, just me as a person, I couldn't watch. You know, I had to turn around. I told somebody else to tell me what happens. I was looking at the crowd and I seen all their faces get sad. So I was happy at that. But you know, I mean, you see those guys make those kicks every day, but you know, it's a different environment. You know, it's tough for those guys. It's not as easy as people may think. You know what I'm saying? Going out there kicking 60,000 people screaming at you like, yo, that's the real deal. You know, he was able to put it through. So it was great for him. And you know, but when I wasn't like, oh, should we kick or should we not kick? You know what I mean? No, we got to kick that. Like those guys practice that. They make them every day. You know what I'm saying? Just got to be prepared. So when your name's called, and I'm glad that he was.
Yeah.
Now, Jeremy, before we let you go, you know, kind of shifting away from the football field. I know off the air before we went live, you were telling us, you know, you're a communications major. So just tell us a little about yourself, you know, as far as your schooling, and then we'll dive into a few other questions that are non-football related.
Yeah, I'm a communications major, specifically journalism. I mean, public speaking, specifically public speaking. So, you know, my football career, I want to do something in that field. You know, I want to be like a sports analyst. I thought about being getting a minor in like business or certificate somewhere in the business field, and probably being a sports agent as well. I would love to stay in the sports field. And also, before I fell in love with football, I was a big basketball player. So if I was a become a sports agent, I probably would do it for the NBA. So for those guys, you know. But
who's your favorite NBA team, Jeremy?
Right now, it got to be the Knicks.
The Knicks, huh?
The Knicks. No, not the Knicks.
Oh, man.
I'm from New Jersey, New York. I'm a Knicks fan. So when you said that, I was shocked. I'm like, no way. But now I'm disappointed because you said Nets. I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah, KD's my favorite player.
See how excited I got for a second, Bubba?
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, Matt. I said that you know, how far have the Knicks fallen over the last last couple decades? Because I remember when the Knicks, and I'm sure they still are up there, but, you know, just, you know, when I think of the Knicks, I think of John Starks and Anthony Mason when they really had it rolling and challenging the Bulls year after year.
Yeah, we don't acknowledge those other guys.
Yeah.
I'm just messing with you, Jeremy. I'm just messing with you.
All right, now Jeremy, you know, prior to a game, you know, if we, you know, how do you prepare for a game? Are you listening to music? You know, once you're, you know, in the locker room, you know, 2-3 hours before kickoff, are you just sitting in your locker listening to music? What's going on?
Yeah, my preparation is a little different. I can't be too focused, too laser locked in, or I can't be just too calm, too chill. You know, I got to be like. My coach explained that you can't be here, you got to be here. So, you know, I try to be like normal, be mutual, you know, not too locked in with the music or not too out of the box. Like I'm not focused for the game, you know, just try to be myself, be normal. And I found like when I do that, I'm playing my best football. So I try to just be chill, you know. I probably listen to some music from here and there, but I try to stay the same, stay the course.
Favorite restaurant in Greenville? Obviously, you hear a lot about Eastern North Carolina barbecue, but, you know, what's a favorite spot or two of yours in Greenville?
One has to be Basil's. I love Basil's. And another one, what else I like?
Was that Italian food, Jeremy? Is that Italian food, Basil's?
Okay. And Angus Grill as well, Angus Grill.
Okay.
Yeah, something like non-chain, but yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome, man. I had to ask it because the town has changed so much. I didn't recognize the name of that place, but
pretty good. It's real good.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jeremy, I mean, I know you need to get going soon, but just wanted to ask you really quick. How do you feel about, you know, I know you mentioned before the show a little bit, it's late into the season, but are you feeling healthy? How's the health status of the team right now? I'm sure there's people banged up, as you would expect, but how's the overall health status of the team right now in the bye week?
It's pretty good. You know, there's guys in the training room, but that's everywhere in America. But, you know what I'm saying, bumps and bruises, things of that nature. And, you know, the people are going to fight through that. You know, just the mindset we have. You can't just let those little things keep you away from the game. You never know when you're going to play your last play. You never know. Like, you know, might not wake up tomorrow. So, you know, you got to play through those things. But overall, me, I'm good. Team's good. Yes, sir.
Great. That's great, man. Bob, I know you have one more comment.
Yeah, we have one more viewer question I wanted to get to. Shell Powell, once again, chiming in from Charlotte. He said, Jeremy, who is your funniest teammate?
Funniest teammate? Oh, man. It's probably Ron Stubblefield. There's a couple of them. Ron Stubblefield, Xavier McIver, those guys, hilarious.
I'm trying to remember. In the last couple games, you may have seen this, Matt. I want to say it was one of the games in Greenville where I was going back and watching it on Sunday, but maybe in the Memphis or UCF game. I want to say UCF. It was when Coach Houston, you know, was – and when he realized that, you know, we had it, you know, under control there in the final couple minutes, and he got a hold of Stubblefield on the sideline and kind of wrapped him up and started shaking him a little bit, and Stubblefield's eyes got really big.
No, Ryan Stubblefield, that boy's a clown, man. He makes me laugh every day.
That's great. You know, Coach Houston does, you know, like he seems like – he gets real fiery, you know. I'm watching on TV. I could tell. It looks like he wants to put a hit on somebody sometimes, you know. He seems like that type of guy, which is fun to play for a guy like that, I would think.
He's about his business. Yeah, he always has our back. And he's about his business for real. Whatever, you know, helps the team win. That's what he's all about.
Well, Jeremy, we appreciate your time this evening. You know, enjoy the open date. You know, you and the guys heal up, and we'll see you up in Cincinnati next weekend.
Yes, sir. Appreciate y'all.
Thanks, Jeremy. Good luck, man.
Yes, sir.
That is East Carolina outside linebacker Jeremy Lewis. An excellent conversation with him. He's certainly having a fine junior season for the Pirates.
Yeah, he really is. It's fun to talk to Jeremy. You know, he's got a great personality, and he's having a great year. And, you know, you got to be happy for the guys right now. I mean, this class, they've endured quite a bit. You know, over the years, and they've been kind of the foundation, Bubba, for building the program and getting it back to where, you know, first getting it back to respectability last year and now taking it to the next level where you're starting to stack wins. And so, you know, you got to be happy for these guys. But hey, here we are, you know, there's a lot of season left, and we got a huge game coming up against Cincinnati, Bubba. And, you know, now it's just a question of, you know, can we stay on this win streak?
Yeah, awesome opportunity. You didn't reference the win streak specifically, and who knows? I mean, anything can happen. Navy could go in there this weekend and be victorious. I seriously doubt it, especially I heard that Ty Levitai, the quarterback for the midshipmen, is out.
Wow.
So an even taller task for the middies heading to Nippert, where the Bearcats have won 30 straight, and the odds are it'll be 31 straight when East Carolina rolls in there next Friday night.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I feel great about our chances in that game, Bubba, regardless of what Cincinnati does this week against Navy. I feel like we can match them physically. You know, I watched very closely the Cincinnati-UCF game, and I felt like UCF was really able to pound them on the ground and run the football very well. I thought they were the more physical team. Now, don't get me wrong. I think Cincinnati still has great talent. They've recruited really well. They're a very solid football team. But, you know, I expect this line when it comes out to be about a field goal, maybe 3.5, 4 points in Cincinnati's favor since they're the home team. But I fully expect this to be a very close game that we have a chance to win.
I definitely agree. And this is one I know our co-host Kyle, who is unable to join us tonight, this is something that he's been saying, you know, the way Coach Houston has built this program, and I think there are a lot of similarities in the way he wants to play and the way Luke Fickell likes to play.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. You look at what Luke Fickell does. I mean, he loves to run the ball, but he really loves to use the tight ends. Like, he really gets the tight ends involved in the offense heavily. And they've had some really good ones over the years there. And, you know, it's a little similar to what we're trying to do here. You know, you see now all of a sudden in year four, we're a very good running team. You know, we're able to run the football very effectively. And then obviously we have some good tight ends too here, Ryan Jones. And, you know, so I do agree. I think it's a similar mentality.
Obviously, in addition to the Bearcats, the Bearcats just went down to UCF over the weekend, and that was a game that was largely what we anticipated it being, you know, a tremendous four-quarter battle that came down to the wire in Orlando. And the initial college football playoff rankings came out tonight, and, you know, looking at these, you have Tulane, you know, whose only loss came against Southern Miss, a game that for the Green Wave was probably very much like the Navy game was for East Carolina, where you just had some things that came back to bite you as far as not taking care of some details and so forth, maybe a big play or two. And then you have UCF, who was coming off that 3-touchdown loss to the Pirates. They responded with a big home win over Cincinnati that vaulted them into the polls at 25th.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, Tulane certainly in a pretty good place right now, sitting at number 19. You got to be impressed with what they've been able to do down there this year. And like you said, Bubba, I think they're the one team that beat us this year. And Jeremy kind of referenced that as well. I mean, that's the one game you can really go back to and say, okay, you know what? We didn't bring it today. We didn't play our best game. We were beaten soundly. So, you know, but you look at some of those other teams in that top 25, UCF, you know, we put it on them pretty good. And then obviously you have the NC State. But, you know, I'll tell you, it's when you watch, again, going back to that UCF-Cincinnati game last week, UCF had the ball inside the 25 twice, ready to score, and they turned the ball over twice, both times there. So they had a chance to put that game away early, and they allowed Cincinnati to stay in it. So, you know, I really feel very strongly that we'll be able to match them on the line of scrimmage.
I agree. And, you know, for a moment before we, you know, shift back to talking about the here and the now, I wanted to pay our respects to East Carolina Hall of Famer and one of the best running backs ever in the purple and gold. And that is Eddie Hicks. He played for Coach Dye. He unfortunately passed away as a result of cardiac arrest on Monday. At the age of 67, you know, ran for over 2,100 yards in his career. And that's a lot of yards, but when you take into consideration the wishbone attack and the number of backs that were being utilized, that's necessary to put that 2,100 yards in perspective. So, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with Eddie Hicks' friends and family. I know, you know, a lot of teammates, as well as Eddie himself, you know, attended that 1978 Independence Bowl, their 40th anniversary party. And we're so glad, you know, from a selfish standpoint, that we were able to meet Eddie Hicks back, I guess, just shy of 4 years ago in December of 2018 at Professor O'Cool's, as it was there in Greenville.
Yeah, absolutely. Rest in peace, Eddie Hicks. Bubba, I'm glad you mentioned this, you know, tremendous player, and, you know, certainly wish the best to his family.
And he was living in Henderson, North Carolina, and as you see there on the screen, Henderson's, of course, in Vance County, and I guess kind of northeast of Durham. And, you know, he was revered in that community and, you know, had some things named after him, as you see on the screen. And once again, thoughts and prayers go out to Eddie Hicks. But, you know, shifting back to the here and now, you know, Matt, have you had a chance to take a look at this week's games, both in the American as well as just throughout the region and nation?
You know, not too much yet, Bubba. I mean, obviously, you know, you have the big one, Tennessee, Georgia, right? So I really haven't had a chance to dive into the games this week. I've kind of enjoying a little bit of the off week too, I guess. But I'll tell you, I wanted to ask you, Bubba, going back to that graphic you put on the screen, you know, the top four teams were released tonight. What are your thoughts on the top four? Did that shake out the way you expected it to?
Honestly, you know, having been so busy tonight, give me a moment. I'll put it back up here and we'll see. You know, Tennessee 1, Ohio State 2, Georgia 3, and Clemson 4. I'd say so. The only thing, I mean, I think given Tennessee's schedule and, you know, the win over Bama and then just the way they dominated, I think if had you not seen them dominate Kentucky the way in which they did, was it 44-6 or something of that nature? Mm-hmm. That may have been reversed. You may have seen the Buckeyes, but I think with the way Tennessee dominated Kentucky, that put them in the top spot. And for now, Ohio State at number two.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think Tennessee deserves to be number one right now. I personally would have Georgia number two. That's just my opinion. You know,
I agree with you. I think is it surprising that Ohio State's ahead of them? No, because, you know, because they have an unblemished record, as does Georgia. But people must be, I think, probably putting too much stock in that game at Missouri.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's probably what it is, you know, but that'll kind of shake itself out this weekend. And, you know, we'll see what happens with that game. But, you know, Clemson at number four, I could go either way with Clemson or possibly Michigan, but I'd lean towards Clemson. So I think that's pretty fair. So I have no problems with that top four. I think it's pretty much right on. And, you know, a lot of football left to be played. I mean, you still have games like, you know, Michigan and Ohio State is out there on the last weekend of the season. So a lot of this stuff is yet to be determined, but I think this is a pretty fair starting point.
I agree. And, you know, looking within the American this week, we talked about number 19, Tulane. They will be traveling out to Tulsa. You know, so a game that they're certainly favored in by a little over a touchdown, 7.5 as it is right now. You have South Florida, 3.5-point favorite in Philly over Temple. You have UCF, the Knights, as we just showed you, are 25th in the initial college football playoff poll. And they are a 3-point favorite in Memphis against the Tigers. You have Cincinnati, a 19-point favorite over Navy, and SMU, a 3-point favorite over Houston. And that game is being played in Dallas.
Those are some really good matchups. I think that UCF Memphis game is going to be, I my personal opinion, I think that's going to be a great game. And I think UCF, where they struggle a little bit, is in their secondary. I think they're a little vulnerable there, as, you know, Holton Ahlers picked them apart a few weeks back. And I think that's Memphis's strength, passing the football. So I think Memphis is going to give them a lot of problems in that game. You know, we'll certainly see. But I think that's a game to watch. And then, you know, the other one you mentioned there, SMU Houston, will be a fun one too.
Brandon chiming in, he said, "I don't understand the rankings. How do they put Bama, you know, who has that loss at Tennessee, in front of unbeaten TCU?" Obviously, you know, Bama is going to give the benefit of the doubt. Their schedule, I'm sure, is something that people would point to. I don't know exactly how it shakes out. I know TCU, they, you know, were pushed to the brink. Certainly, Oklahoma State did not do the Horned Frogs any favors by going to K-State and getting beat 48-0, because, I mean, You still don't know. I mean, my guess is that Alabama would have probably still been ranked ahead of TCU, but TCU had to come from behind. They were down in, I think, at least 14 points, if not, you know, 17 against the Cowboys at home. And you know, like I know, Matt, that you can't go by, you know, comparing scores, but I'm sure a lot of these college football playoff voters, you know, couldn't get that out of their mind the way TCU had to rally, and then Oklahoma State just got dominated in Manhattan.
Yeah, I agree. I think Brandon asks a good question there, and or makes a good point. And you know, I think there's just such history with Alabama. They've been so good for so long that there's almost a mindset there, like, hey, like, you know, you need to beat them. You need to show us that you can beat them on the field. And so I think they're always going to get that when it comes down to Alabama versus somebody else. They're always going to get that, I guess, that judgment call, you would say. But
they had that close call with Texas A&M,
right?
Exactly. And I know that. I guess that was without Bryce Young, but still, they nearly lost to Texas A&M at home,
and Texas as well. Right.
Exactly.
You know, they could have lost that game very easily. There were some really questionable
calls
in that game, Bubba. I thought that swayed it. But you know, hey, Alabama, they'll look mortal sometimes. But when you put them in a big game on a big stage, you know, good luck beating them.
Yeah, I agree that not only was the matchup bad for Mississippi State, and just them coming off that loss at Tennessee, you know, I knew that one was not going to end well for Mike Leach and the Bulldogs. And, you know, after the game, I mean, that's something we laughed about last week, Matt, is, you know, the way Mike Leach challenged his players during the postgame press conference. Remember, that's when he made the reference to the dinosaurs and how his guys were not using their hands well. And, you know, if they didn't start using their hands, then he was afraid that their kids or their grandkids may not have hands. So kind of like you know, just a little evolution theory there.
Yeah, that was great. We need more Mike Leaches in college football. Like, we've lost so many of these big personalities over the years. Guys like, you know, Bobby Bowden and Spurrier comes to mind. You know, Mike Leach, I feel like, is one of the few guys we have left in college football that has that kind of. I love his press conferences. Like, he's so entertaining to me. The whole thing about the dinosaur arms and the T-Rex, that was classic Mike Leach. I loved it.
Richard Allsbrook chiming in. He said, any chance Boise sneaks into the Group of Five conversation for that New Year's Six, and having a chance to become the highest-ranked Group of Five conference champion?
What's up, Richard? Well, they have a big one this week. You know, they're hosting BYU. And that's going to be another interesting game to watch. But, you know, I think the thing about Boise, I think they're very good, but I think their schedule is kind of weak, honestly. But I certainly wouldn't be shocked if they kept winning and found a spot there. But I do think their schedule, when you look at it, it's a little bit suspect, in my opinion. What do you think, Bubba?
Yeah, taking a look at their remaining schedule on just a moment here on the screen. As you mentioned, they have BYU this week, and then they go to Nevada, to Wyoming, and then what have Utah State. So, I'd say out of those four, that BYU and at Wyoming are their most challenging games.
Yeah, I mean, you have some of the worst teams in the country on that schedule. You look at Colorado State, Utah State is awful. You know, Nevada's, you know, like, none of those teams really jump out at me. Air Force is probably the best one I see besides BYU. So, yeah, I mean, hey, we'll see what happens.
But obviously at this point, I agree with Richard as he chimes in and was going where I was with this comment. And he says the path is for the American, in his opinion, no doubt about it. You know, Tulane, despite that loss to Southern Miss, is ranked 19th. And is certainly the Green Wave's, you know, New Year's Six bid to lose at this point. But, you know, a lot can still happen, as we know. You have Houston, and that's something just because of the way they struggled, and with the majority of those struggles coming outside the conference, with the exception of that loss to Tulane, it's almost surprising when you look at the standings and see the Cougars with just one league loss.
Don't they have a tendency to do that, Bubba? Like, it seems like the last few years, you know, I feel like they find a way. They just find a way to win these games, and they're always in the mix late in the season. And, you know, like last year, they really snuck up on me a little bit. And, you know, this year they really struggled early, and now they seem to be moving in the right direction again. So, no, like I think, like Jeremy Lewis said earlier in the program, when you look at this conference, you really feel like anybody can win on any given week. And I feel like East Carolina can beat anybody in this conference this year. I also feel like if we don't bring our A game, we can lose. So it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out.
Yeah, you saw that, you know, with the Pirates falling to Navy, you know, and then you had South Florida, you know, right after we put 41 or whatever it was on them in a half, they went to Cincinnati and, you know, took Cincinnati to the brink. The Bearcats had to come from behind in the fourth quarter to beat the Bulls and, you know, keep that win streak at Nippert Stadium alive.
Yeah, that would have been an absolute shocker, right, if South Florida was able to pull that off. But, you know, hey, it's the type of conference right now where you have to bring it every week, and if you have a letdown, you can be beat. And, you know, we've seen it here, and I'm just hoping those days are behind us now for East Carolina, that we've gotten to a point where we're, you know, every single Saturday, you know, we're in the game with an opportunity to win.
No doubt. Another intriguing game this weekend, Matt. You have number 23 Liberty going to Fayetteville, Arkansas, to take on Sam Pittman and the Razorbacks. Liberty's ranked 23rd, but the Razorbacks are a 13.5 point favorite.
Yeah, basically what they're telling us there is the SEC is the best conference, and you know, even our middle-of-the-road SEC teams are better than what else is out there. And I feel like Liberty has a chance in that game. I think that line is probably a little too high, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if Liberty won that game.
I agree. I think I would pick Arkansas with it being there, but I do think that they'll probably cover. I think I would take them in the 13.5.
Yeah. And they certainly won't sneak up on them, you know, with the rank and coming off that huge win over BYU. So
our good friend Paul Russell disagrees. He said Razorbacks by a million. So
I like the confidence there.
Yeah. We shall see. I think that game, I just like to see some of the matchups in the trenches. I mean, you think Arkansas went to BYU. They won a shootout there. It was 52-35. And they've given up a lot of points at times this year. So it'll be interesting to see how that offense of Liberty matches up with the Razorback defense, because I think back early in the season, South Carolina got beat by, I think, about 17 points or something at Arkansas. But it was like, I don't know, 49-33, where South Carolina did have some success offensively, and they weren't exactly clicking on all cylinders offensively at that point. So that will be an interesting matchup to see how that pans out for Hugh Freeze. And speaking of Liberty and Hugh Freeze, you know, did you see, Matt, where he signed a new deal? I believe it was $5 million
a year. I heard about that. That's it's a pretty remarkable contract. You know, the amount of money Liberty has is pretty impressive. And he's done a great job there. He, you know, you have to give him credit. He's done a great job at Liberty. So I guess congrats to him.
And here in the last couple of days, Brian Harsin, not surprisingly, was let go down on the plains at Auburn. So, you know, what direction do you think Auburn will go? Auburn hiring a new offensive offensive coordinator, athletic director from Mississippi State, John Cohen, you know, who oddly enough, you know, he was Mississippi State's baseball coach and was a Mississippi State alum, but opting to leave to go to Auburn. So what direction do you think he goes? Do you think it could be Hugh Freeze, Lane Kiffin, Deion Sanders? All of those are names that we're hearing.
That's going to be fun to watch. I think they're definitely going to go. You know, Brian Harsin was a guy that he came from another part of the country. He was not like one of those what you would consider an SEC guy. And that clearly didn't work out. I think they're going to go. They're going to try to do something like similar to what LSU did, where they're going to go out and try to get a proven winner with a big track record, you know, similar like with LSU did with Brian Kelly. And, you know, I could definitely see them throwing a ton of money at somebody like a Lane Kiffin. I could see that for sure. And he's a guy that he has no problem jumping around from job to job. So I wouldn't be shocked to see that at all. But yeah, Deion Sanders is another interesting one, Bubba. I mean, like I've said, we've talked about this a bunch of times. Deion Sanders is the type of guy where whatever school he's going to go to, he's going to recruit players. There's going to be players out there that want to play for him. And I think he would be able to bring in some big time players to Auburn very quickly.
Robert Dedrick chiming in on YouTube. He brings up from the fired Carolina Panthers head coach, Matt Rhule, who obviously did such a tremendous job at Temple as well as at Baylor, you know, battling some very unique circumstances there in Waco. So what do you think about Matt Rhule? I think he would be more a fit at a program like Nebraska that's in the Big Ten, you know, with what I see, you know, as far as his personality, much more so than somewhere like Auburn.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, I feel like he's more of a fit in the Big Ten than the SEC. You know, he is a Northern guy. His roots are in the North. You know, he was with the New York Giants. He was with Temple for a while. So I could see him, if anything, going to the Big Ten. I could see him having a lot of success, you know, somewhere like a Boston College or, you know, one of those type schools. I don't see him as a fit for Auburn personally.
And looking at this week's slate, then there's not a ton of, you know, games involving two ranked teams. You did mention the headliner with number one Georgia against number two Tennessee, as it was by the other polls. Obviously, number one Tennessee and number three Georgia as the college football playoff poll states, and that's obviously the poll that matters. So you also have number six Alabama, the Crimson Tide, headed to Tiger Stadium for a night game against the Bayou Bengals, who are now up to 15th. So what are your thoughts on that one? Bama's a 13-point favorite, but Brian Kelly and this Tigers team really has steadily improved as the season has gone on.
Yeah, they've been an interesting team to watch because they've been a little up and down, but they're definitely getting better as the season goes on, and they have a lot of talent. So, and you said it's a night game? You said it's a night game, Bubba?
Yes, that's correct. Okay. It's a 7 o'clock game.
So yeah, we know how tough it is to play in Baton Rouge in a night game. So I wouldn't be shocked at all if that was a really close game. Like, I would actually, just thinking of that line, I would think LSU covers that.
And you look at last year's matchup on the Crimson Tide, won 20-14 in Tuscaloosa. So that was a situation where, and there was definitely some, I think that was that after Ed Orgeron was fired?
It seems like,
I may be mistaken on that, but it seems like it may have been where they were kind of playing with house money and just trying to be a spoiler for the Crimson Tide. Very different situation, but you know, kind of reminded you of that Texas A&M game this year, you know, where they went in a sizable underdog, like 3.5 touchdowns, and nearly came out victorious.
Yeah, that stadium's going to be on fire. That crowd's going to be jacked up. I think that's going to be a really close game.
Yeah, I think I would take the Tigers and those 13 points or whatever it was.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
So, you're looking at the rest of the slate, another intriguing game. Maybe not as much as some would have thought, at the start of the season, but you have number 5 Clemson, or number 4 as they are in the college football playoff poll, heading to South Bend to take on Notre Dame. The Tigers are a 3.5-point favorite.
That is an interesting game there. And, you know, it seems, I just feel like Clemson has their number. Like their athletes show up when they play Notre Dame. And, you know, I feel like Clemson's just too good. Honestly, I really do. Notre Dame, they had a really surprising win to me last week at Syracuse. I felt very strongly that Syracuse would win that game at home. But Notre Dame, you know, this team has a weird way of surprising you. You know, like they destroyed the Tar Heels in Chapel Hill earlier this year. That kind of came out of nowhere. I think after like they lost to Marshall. So they've been really up and down, that team. But now they're, you know, it's another team. Maybe they're getting better as the season goes on. A home game against Clemson. But I just don't see them being able to score on Clemson's defense.
Yeah, they lost that. You talk about their up and down season in addition to the loss to Marshall. And they had the, I think, what, 16-14 loss to Stanford?
Yeah, that's an awful loss.
And that's a Stanford team that's 3-4.
That's a terrible loss. I don't know how you dropped that game, but that's brutal. Not a good sign.
And the only other game I wanted to bring up is of regional interest. You have Wake Forest and NC State. That's a matchup involving two top 25 teams. The Demon Deacons, obviously 10th a week ago, fell considerably, as you would have expected, after a sizable loss at Louisville. And the Demon Deacons are currently a 4.5-point favorite over number 22, NC State. And obviously the Wolfpack have some offensive struggles since Devin Leary went down and Jack Chambers and company. They found a way to rally from 21-3. You know, first of all, who would have ever thought, you know, even without Devin Leary, that they would be behind Virginia Tech 21-3, but they were, and to their credit, they came back and won 22-21.
Yeah, it's amazing how different that team is without Leary. And Chambers has been pretty bad, honestly. They went to the true freshman. I cannot recall his name for the life of me. They went to the true freshman late in that game, maybe midway through the third quarter against Virginia Tech. And you could see he has a ton of raw talent. The talent is off the charts. So, their offense is definitely struggling, and they're going to get Wake's best punch because Wake got absolutely humiliated last week at Louisville. So I think they're going to be ready to go. And I think Wake will find a way to outscore them and win that game, Bubba.
Yeah. And to your point, you can tell I fell asleep that night and just saw the score. MJ Morris, I believe that is who you were referencing. MJ Morris, the Wolfpack quarterback, you know, who came off the bench against Virginia Tech, 6'2", 192 pounds, out of Carrollton, Georgia, and he was 20 out of 29 for 265 yards, 3 touchdowns, and no interceptions. So, heck of a statement by that young man.
Yeah, that was really impressive. And, you know, he's going to have a much bigger test this week. Virginia Tech, obviously, this is probably the worst Virginia Tech team I think maybe I've ever seen. I mean, at least in many, many years. They're a bad football team, surprisingly. So bigger test for the freshman this week against Wake. And but you could see, you know, the raw athleticism is definitely there for him.
So, Matt, one other thing I wanted to mention, kind of shifting gears away from football before we wrap this up and get out of here. You know, this weekend the Pirates are not playing, but it's a great time to get out to Clark LeClaire Stadium and watch some baseball. The Pirates, over the last two weekends, you know, went down to Clemson, you know, split with the Tigers, split this last weekend at Clark LeClaire against the Virginia Cavaliers. So get out to Clark LeClaire and get a glimpse at the 2023 Pirates as Cliff Godwin and company look to win a fourth consecutive AAC title.
Absolutely, man. It's got to get out and support this team when you can. And before you know it, baseball season will be rolling around. So it'll be fun to watch.
And Josh Moreland's swung the bat well at times. You know, he's hit a couple bombs, one against the Tigers, one against the Cavs. A lot of eyes are on the battle at shortstop. You know, Connor Rasmussen, and then also Nathan Chrisman, who's from just down the road from me right here, just a few miles from my house, South Rowan High School. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, who ends up playing shortstop in 2023. And my guess is at one point or another, it'll probably be multiple people early in the season, but we shall see. But for our absent co-hosts, Dave Richmond and Kyle Barber, as well as Matt Semenza, I'm Bub Rosenbaum. You've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective on YouTube and Facebook. Also, be sure to subscribe on YouTube, like and follow on Facebook, and, you know, give us a follow or a like wherever you tune in. Wherever you can find podcasts, you can probably find us. But have a great weekend, everyone, and we'll be talking to you soon as we join you here on The Sports Objective. Take care, and as always, go Pirates.
Why not copy that? Everybody gonna see us go bananas, feet loud, but don't hold back. Every foot, every yard, every first down, every touchdown with the cannons blast.